Good evening. I had to figure out that little thing there. I don't think I did it right, but we'll have to figure that out when he gets back. If you have your Bibles, take them and turn to Hebrews chapter 6. Hebrews chapter 6. I'm sure that we can all remember when the tornado struck a few months back and what it was like if you were in the area when you heard on the news that the storms were coming and there was a tornado warning or tornado watch. I'm not sure which one is worse. But that they told you had to get to a safe place. I actually had flown in from a meeting and had gotten off the plane when they were saying that. And I said, I need to get to where my boys were right away. And the goal there was to seek refuge, to get to safety. That was the goal for me, and I wanted to make sure that my kids, my family, were safe in a safe place, a place of refuge. Now, the Bible speaks about this quite frequently. It speaks as God as our place of refuge in a storm. In fact, the book of Psalms mentions God as our refuge 12 times. And it is speaking about that same idea that there's a storm and we're going to seek that refuge, that place to find shelter. Well, that's actually speaking about a Christian's life. That's actually speaking about trials and temptations and difficulties and seeking God when those storms of life come in and rage at you for the most part. The problem with that, the difficulty with that, is you have to be a Christian for God to be that type of a refuge. For God to be a refuge in the difficulties of life, you have to be a Christian. You have to have a relationship there. There has to be a prior commitment. There has to be trust. There has to be something established. Well, the problem is you have to find refuge first, don't you? If you know anything about the Bible, you know that sin is rampant in our lives and that we are each sinners. We need to have a refuge from that sin, a refuge from the consequences from that sin. Well, the Bible speaks of Jesus Christ as a refuge. And it's a different type of refuge than the refuge of the storms of life. And in Hebrews chapter 6, verse 18, we're going to see how the Bible speaks about Christ as our refuge and kind of expand on that and how it applies to our lives. So reading verse 18, it says that by two immutable things in which it was impossible for God to lie, we might have a strong consolation who have fled for refuge to lay hold upon the hope set before us. Now, there are three parts of this verse that we're going to look at. There's a lot in this verse. But there are three parts that we're going to look at specifically. The first part makes it possible to perform the second part. And when you perform the second part, that gives you the results of the third part. And you say, well, what are you saying? Well, there are three parts. The first is fleeing for refuge. That's the first part that we're going to look at. You see it there. Who have fled for refuge. Now, this is not the same type of refuge that I mentioned from the book of Psalms. It's not the refuge from the storms of life. That's not what is being talked about. The reference is to the cities of refuge in the Old Testament. The cities of refuge were something that was outlined in the Old Covenant. And we're going to look at that a little later on. That's going to be the main part of the message tonight. That's a refuge that's different from the storms. That's fleeing from something that is going to cause you death. That's why the cities of refuge were put into place by the Lord, and we're going to look at that. But notice the action that is performed. It's called fleeing. We fled for refuge. We fled for refuge to Christ if you are a Christian. If you are not a Christian, you haven't realized that you need to flee. Because fleeing is a very strong action. It is not something that you take lightly. The word flee really has a powerful meaning behind it, doesn't it? It gets the idea that you are afraid. You are afraid for your life. You know that if a tornado was bearing down on us, you would flee for refuge. But that's not the idea here. The idea is there is certain death coming. There is certain death coming for you, and you have to flee. You have to run for all that you're worth. And you think about that and you say, well, is that what the Bible is talking about? Well, it sure is. Jesus came to heal who? The sick. He's the great physician. It's fascinating as a man, you always hear men say, oh, I'm not going to the doctor. I'm not going to the doctor. I'm not going to the doctor. Because they think they're healthy. And they don't want to find out that they're not. Really, you need to go to the physician to find out if you need the physician or not. Well, with the great physician, we need the physician. He came to heal the sin, the sickness of sin. He came to bring forgiveness of sin. If your house is on fire, what do? You call the fire department. Do you call the fire department if your house isn't on fire? Back a couple years ago, we were all in bed, and it was about 2:30 in the morning, and the smoke detectors went off. We got right out of bed. I grabbed two kids. Jennifer grabbed another. We ran outside. We waited and waited and waited and didn't see any smoke. So then we went back inside and got the phone and called the fire department. You call them when you need them. If you don't have a fire, you don't call the fire department. If you don't flee to Christ, it's because you do not know that you need to flee. But when you find out that there is a penalty hanging over your head, what do? You flee. You run. You go as fast as you possibly can. And then you're fleeing from something, aren't you? You're fleeing from that sin. You're fleeing from that penalty of sin to something. You're fleeing to Christ. You're fleeing to that refuge. In this case, it's a refuge to your soul. And when you think about that refuge, what does it gain you? If you are fleeing for refuge, it is to do something, isn't it? Well, that's the second part of that verse. When you flee for refuge, you are fleeing for refuge to lay hold upon the hope that is set before us. That's the goal. You know, we think of hope as something that's this esoteric thought. It's out there. We hope we get something tomorrow. We hope we're going to have a nice meal. We hope we're going to get a nice fat raise. All these things we hope for. That's not what it's talking about. Because why do I say that? Because he says, lay hold of the hope. Lay hold of the hope. He's speaking about Christ. He is the hope that's set before us. And we're going to lay hold on that hope when you flee for refuge to him. That's the goal. That's the fleeing that takes place. You're laying hold of it. You're grasping it firmly. And when you grasp it firmly, you're not going to be letting go. And so what are you doing? Well, you're fleeing from sin. You're fleeing from sin to the only refuge possible, and that's Christ. And you're laying hold of him. You're laying hold of that hope that was set before us because he is the only hope for sinners. He's the only possibility for forgiveness of sin. And so the focus isn't behind us. The focus isn't the person chasing us down. But that fear is there. That thought is in the back of our heads. Someone is coming after me. If someone was chasing me down, I wouldn't be looking over my shoulder to find out how close they were. I would be running all I could to get to a place of refuge. And that's the idea that's here. That's the idea that's in the city of refuge. You are looking to what's in front of you. You're looking to the hope that has been set before you. That hope is Christ. And so sin has caused you to flee, but the focus should be upon the one that can give you that refuge. The one that is the hope. That, you know, I think of my children and I think of if they get hurt or if something happens or if there's lightning, they run to me. They don't look back at the lightning. They run to me as a refuge. They think that I somehow have the power to protect them in a lightning storm. I'm glad they think that. It's incorrect, but I'm glad they think that. But that's the idea here. They're fleeing to me as the refuge. And that's the idea of Christ. We flee to Christ. Well, the third part of this is the strong consolation. You look at it here that by two immutable things in which it was impossible for God to lie, we might have a strong consolation who have fled for refuge to lay hold upon the hope set before us. Strong consolation, what is that? It's not the consolation prize. It's not that you came in second place. The strong consolation is a strong comfort. It's a security. It's a knowledge that you have secured the hope that you were fleeing for. That when you were fleeing for that city of refuge, when you were fleeing for that place of safety, you lay hold of it. Well, why do you have that? Well, there's just the thing where it says in that first part of the verse that by two immutable things. And we're not going to get into those two immutable things tonight because we just don't have the time. But those two immutable things are God saying it's so. And then him saying, I promise you that. It's him saying it and then promising that it's true. And when he does that, he says, this is the strong consolation you have when you flee to Christ. That you can rest in him. You can rest assured that it's true. You flee from sin itself to the hope that's before you. The action of fleeing Him, it allows you to lay hold of Him. And then when you lay hold of Him, that hope, it's secure. It's strong. It's not going anywhere. And you have that hope and you have that safety, but not the safety from a storm, but safety from death, safety from hell, safety from eternal separation from God. And so we think about these three parts of this verse. And it's all about that type that I mentioned previously, the city of refuge. The city of refuge is, in the Old Testament, a picture of Jesus Christ. That's what a type is. It's a type of Christ. It's a picture set out to try and give the Jews a picture of who Jesus is, who the Messiah is, what His actions are going to be. And so the writer of Hebrews is calling Jesus that city of refuge. So what we're going to do now is turn to Numbers chapter 35. Numbers 35, and we're going to look at the city of refuge. Now, there's a number of different passages that speak about it. Numbers 35, I think, is a clear one. There's also Deuteronomy 19 and Joshua 20 and 21, when the cities were actually set apart. And we're going to read starting in verse 9 of Numbers 35, down to verse 29. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, When ye be come over Jordan into the land of Canaan, then ye shall appoint you cities to be cities of refuge for you, that the slayer may flee thither, which killeth any person at unawares. And they shall be unto you cities for refuge from the avenger, that the manslayer die not until he stand before the congregation in judgment. And of these cities which ye shall give, six cities shall ye have for refuge. Ye shall give three cities on this side Jordan, and three cities shall ye give in the land of Canaan, which shall be cities of refuge. These six cities shall be a refuge both for the children of Israel, and for the stranger, and for the sojourner among them, that every one that killeth any person unawares may flee thither. And if he smite him with an instrument of iron so that he die, he is a murderer, the murderer shall surely be put to death. And if he smite him with throwing a stone wherewith he may die, and he die, he is a murderer, the murderer shall surely be put to death. Or if he smite him with a hand weapon of wood, wherewith he may die, and he die, he is a murderer, the murderer shall surely be put to death. The revenger of blood himself shall slay the murderer. When he meeteth him, he shall slay him. But if he thrust him of hatred, or hurl at him by laying of weight, that he die, or in enmity smite him with his hand, that he die, he that smote him shall surely be put to death, for he is a murderer. The revenger of blood shall slay the murderer when he meeteth him. But if he thrust him suddenly without enmity, or have cast upon him anything without laying of weight, or with any stone wherewith a man may die, seeing him not and cast it upon him, that he die, and was not his enemy, neither sought his harm, then the congregation shall judge between the slayer and the revenger of blood according to these judgments. And the congregation shall deliver the slayer out of the hand of the revenger of blood, and the congregation shall restore him to the city of his refuge, whither he was fled. And he shall abide in it unto the death of the high priest, which was anointed with the holy oil. But if the slayer shall at any time come without this border of the city of his refuge, whither he was fled, and the revenger of blood find him without the borders of the city of his refuge, and the revenger of blood kill the slayer, he shall not be guilty of blood, because he should have remained in the city of his refuge until the death of the high priest. But after the death of the high priest, the slayer shall return into the land of his possession. So these things shall be for a statute of judgment unto you throughout your generations and all your dwellings. So, the city of refuge. Well, what is it? Well, you can imagine a situation where you are with another person and you are out doing something. And inadvertently, maybe you're chopping wood. Maybe you're out there with an axe and you're chopping wood and the axe head flies off, strikes the other person in the head and kills them. What are you going to do? There are no witnesses. There's no way for anyone to tell whether it was a crime, whether you murdered him, or whether you killed him inadvertently. What you do is you drop everything, and you run for the city of refuge. The city of refuges were designed to take the manslayer, someone that was not guilty of murder. And what would take place is this person who had killed someone would flee to that city of refuge. And the blood avenger, the person that was in charge of seeking retribution, eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth, for the nation, would not be able to touch you once you were in the city of refuge. when you were in the city of refuge, the judges would convene to try your case, to see whether or not you were a murderer or whether you were a manslayer, whether it was an accident or not. And they would try your case, and once your case was tried, if they decided you were a murderer, well, then you were found guilty and the punishment was placed upon you of death. If you were found not guilty, then you had to remain in the city of refuge, possibly for the rest of your life, because it was intent upon you to stay there until the high priest died. That was the high priest during the time that you committed the act. And once that high priest died, then you could return to your home. And the blood avenger could do nothing to you. Now, if you left the city of refuge before the high priest died and the blood avenger saw you, he could kill you with no recompense whatsoever. And that would have been justice. And so you say, well, how does this show a type of Christ? Well, it's interesting because there's one breakdown of the entire type, and that is the cause for the need of the city of refuge. Imagine yourself in that situation, and you know your only hope is the city of refuge. Well, you're going to flee, aren't you? As fast as you possibly can. Well, when you think about our situation with Christ, we're guilty, aren't we? There's no question about it. There's no court case that needs to be held to find out our guilt or our innocence. We're guilty of murder. And you say, well, how are we guilty of murder? Well, we're each sinners. What has that sin caused? It's caused the death of our soul, hasn't it? We're dead in our trespasses and sins. We've murdered ourselves. We've committed this crime against our own self, besides against God. And what is the just penalty for that? Well, it's death. It's death, and it comes quickly to each of us. It may seem like a while, but it doesn't. It's a fast mover. What is the only option? It's to flee to the city of refuge. It's to flee to the one place where you can find rest for your soul. The one place where you can find forgiveness of that sin. That's through Jesus Christ. And that's the one place where this type breaks down. But the rest of the type is a beautiful picture of the work of Christ, of the work of what he does for lost sinners. So the purpose of the city is to do what? It's to protect the innocent. It's to protect those that killed someone accidentally, who were guilty of killing someone, but it wasn't on purpose. Now, as men go, sometimes you're going to find that you declare someone guilty who's not. It looks awful like you didn't like that guy, even though you're working next to him. Just like Brother Ron said this morning, sometimes the guilty are declared innocent, and sometimes the innocent are declared guilty. Thankfully, that's not the case with Jesus Christ. So who was the city designed for? It was designed for that one person who had killed someone. It was designed for that one person who needed to flee. And that's the thing that we really need to impress upon each one of us. There's a need to flee. There's a need to flee from our sin and our death, because we all are dead in our trespasses and sins. And we need to flee to Christ. The blood avenger. The blood avenger was the one that was the closest member of the family. If someone had killed a brother of mine, I became the blood avenger. It was my responsibility to bring justice upon the person who committed that crime. And it was my responsibility to find them. And so I would track them down. Imagine if someone killed my brother, my best friend, and how quickly do you think I would seek them out? How much more import does it make it for that person to flee to that city of refuge? It creates a strong impression upon you, doesn't it? When you start to think of it in that way, it's an emergency. It's not something where you sit back and you wait and you twiddle your thumbs and you say, you know what, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to eat my lunch. They'll trust me. No, you flee. You flee because the penalty is death. The blood avengers got every right to kill you before you ever get to the city of refuge. Blood for eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, life for life. And he has every right to kill you before your case is ever heard by a judge. So you flee to that city of refuge. You flee to that hope. And you lay hold of it. And you hold it fast. And you wait for those judges to come. So the question becomes, who maintains the city of refuge? Well, it was the job of the Levites. They were actually priestly cities. And the priests were to maintain those cities. They were to maintain the borders of those cities. And those borders were very clearly defined. I'm not going to get into the acreage that was allowed around the walls of the city. When you got to those acres, when you got to those plowed fields for the city of refuge, you were in the city. Well, what does that mean? Well, the city had to be well maintained. It had to be well signed. Because if the avenger of blood is hot on my heels, I want to know and I want to make sure he knows as soon as I cross that border. Isn't that right? I don't want there to be any confusion. Well, that's like Christ. That's the way it is. You're believing or you're not believing. You're trusting or you're not trusting. You're looking to him or you're not looking to him. You're looking to yourself or something else. You look to Christ. You flee to that city of refuge. You flee to him. And so there are some rules that were placed upon these cities. The roads had to be well maintained. Some of the Jewish commentators say that the every road to a city of refuge had to be clear, had to have marked stones on in case it happened at night, so that you could see the road going to the city of refuge. So that it was clearly marked, so that no matter where you were, you could get to that city. There had to be signs at the intersections, pointing the way of safety, saying refuge in this direction. Well, isn't that like Christ? Isn't that what we do here every single Sunday? Every Wednesday? Isn't that what we as Christians should be doing every day with our lost family members? We should be pointing the way to the city of refuge, shouldn't we? Making it clear, removing any encumbrance, so that when someone comes under the conviction of the Spirit, they know the way. They can see it clearly from the lives we've lived, from the words we've said, from the sermons that have been preached, from the songs that we've sung. Everything about us ought to be just like those priests who had to maintain that city, who had to maintain those roads, who had to maintain those signs, pointing to that city of refuge, saying, come here. And then once they crossed that border, they were safe. One of the fascinating things about it, there were six cities. There were three on the east side of Jordan. There were three on the west side of Jordan. And the way they were placed by the Lord, the farthest was a half day's journey from anywhere in the nation. So that no matter where you lived, if you lived in Judah, if you lived in Ephraim, Manasseh, Gad, whatever tribe you were in, there was a city of refuge within a half day's journey from you, about 30 miles. You get on a horse, you get on a camel, and you flee. And you can be there within a day. That's the idea of the city of refuge. It's not just for those that are well off, those that can get there quickly on their own means. No, anybody can get there. It doesn't make a difference who you are. Why? Because they're close. Isn't that the gospel? Isn't that the gospel of Christ? It's close. It's near to every one of us. Now, there are people that have sat in this church for years and heard the gospel 2-3 times a week. It's very close. But they haven't felt the need to flee. The sin has not been impressed upon their heart. It has not been revealed to their eyes. That's our job, isn't it? Show them the way. Say, here is the city of refuge. Here is Christ. Here is the one that can relieve the burden that you don't even know you have. Why? Because death is coming soon. Death is coming to all. And you are guilty. And that's the key. We're every one of us guilty. Every one of us has sinned against the Lord. You know, it's fascinating, and I don't know if it's pushing it too far with the cities, or if that's the way the Lord designed it. But the names of the cities, one is Bezer. What's the meaning of Bezer? It's strong. It's strength. You think of that strong consolation. Next is Ramoth-Gilead. It's the height in Gilead. You always think of the city set upon a hill, clearly seen from all around. Well, Ramoth-Gilead was a height in the city, in the region of Gilead. Golan. Golan was an exile. What are you when you are in the city of refuge? You're an exile. You're not in your home anymore. You don't have the ability to return there. As long as that high priest lives, you're stuck in that city of refuge. But do you think it's stuck? Do you think you feel bad? It's a joy, isn't it? It's a joy that you're alive. It's a joy that it's possible for you to live, to keep going forward. Hebron is community or an alliance. Well, the community is taking care of you. The community is providing for you. You've left all your possessions. You're not going to go back to your house to get your wealth. You're not going to go back and say, family, let's go. You're going to flee as quickly as you can and then expect your family to find you. So you're burdened upon that community. Shechem means shoulder. The idea of the shoulder to cry on or the strength of the shoulders to carry you. Those things are very clear to me. And then the last one is Kedesh. Kedesh actually means sanctuary. Somehow I don't think that was a mistake. That this is the city of refuge. This is the sanctuary. This is the place of safety. This is the place where you can dwell in safety until your court case is heard, and then forever after that, until the death of the high priest. And that was fascinating to me, that the city of refuge was a refuge until the death of the high priest. I haven't been able to find out any commentator who gave a good reason why that was the case. Why if the high priest was alive, you had to stay there, and once the high priest died, then you could go home again. No one had a valid reason for that. Maybe I missed the commentators that did. But no one had a valid reason. I have to think it has something to do with Jesus Christ. I have to think it has something to do with the fact that these cities of refuge are a type of Him. You think about it, if you were in Israel in those times, and you killed someone, and what happens if the high priest died of a heart attack the day before this happened? And all of a sudden his son, who's 18 years old, is made high priest. Well, you fled to the city of refuge, and now you have an 18-year-old high priest that you have to wait out. If you're 40 years old, what's the expectation that you're going to die before he does? The rest of your life is spent in that city, isn't it? Or maybe you hope that the high priest is 95, and he's going to die the next day, and you can go home and be in safety. But think about it from the aspect of a Christian who has fled to Christ for refuge. When can you leave that city? Well, you can't. Can you? It's not possible. You say, well, why isn't it possible? Well, who's the high priest? It's Jesus Christ. He's the great high priest. He's not going to be dying anytime soon, is he? He's not going to be dying. He is the great high priest, and there is no leaving that city any longer. And not only that, there's no desire to leave. Because you found that refuge for your soul. You found that place that is secure. You found that hope that has been set before you. You found that strong consolation. That comfort that nothing else can give. Because you know you're guilty. And that's why it's so fascinating that the type breaks down. Because we know we're guilty. When you flee to Him, you know you have to pay that penalty. Unless He's paid it for you. And you go there and you are safe and you're secure. And it's a comfort. And that hope that surrounds you. And you can live your life knowing that you are going to be with Christ one day. And that the penalty that you should have paid has already been paid for you. So the blood avenger has nothing on you. There is no way for him to seek retribution any longer. Because the price has already been paid. And you're in that city. Now, it's interesting to think about. If, say you were on your way to the city of refuge. And say you happened to strike the blow that killed your counterpart at 11 o'clock in the morning. And you're going along, and you're going as fast as you can to the city of refuge, and you come across someone that's on the road, and they're saying, hey, friend, why don't you stop here and eat lunch with me? Why don't you stop here and have a nice meal? Or, you know, there's a nice city over here. What would you think of that person? You say, I can't stop. I've got to go. I'm fleeing from the blood avenger. And you say, no, you need to wait with me. You need to spend time with me. Don't go to that city yet. Spend time with me. What did you think of that person? I wouldn't think very much of that person. They're trying to distract someone and it may cost them their life. You think about that, and it happens all the time in this world, doesn't it? There are constantly people trying to distract from Jesus Christ. Distract from the way of safety. Distract from the city of refuge. Sometimes they even change the signs and point in the wrong direction. And say, no, you have to go this way. Come to this place. This is the city of refuge. And Christ is not there. There is no refuge there. And the manslayer, the blood avenger, can find them and kill them because they have not found Jesus Christ. What happens if you leave the city? In the Old Testament, if you left the city, the punishment could fall at any time. If the high priest was still alive, that punishment could fall upon you. There would be no retribution on the blood avenger. Well, thankfully, that's not possible for a true Christian. There is no leaving the city. There's no desire to leave the city. And when we stray, when we get close, there's someone to pull us back. Say, no, that's the wrong way. You need to stay here. That's the strong consolation that we have. That's the strong consolation that's been given because we laid hold of that hope. We've secured that hope. Why? Because we fled. We fled from our sin. We fled from the death that is due us, the death that we've earned. And we fled to Christ. And that's what we do when we get up and preach, when we teach, when anyone is speaking to someone else. We're encouraging you to flee. Flee to that city of refuge. Flee to Jesus Christ. You have no idea what your future holds. You don't know if you'll be alive tomorrow or tonight. But one thing we do know is sin is real. And each one of us are guilty. We're all dead in our trespasses and sins. And we need to flee to Christ. So there's that need, isn't there? We need Christ as our refuge. There is no other thing that can forgive sins. There is no other way but His way. Charles Spurgeon said it this way, and I thought it was a wonderful statement. You have always been so good and excellent that you feel no joy at the thought of another standing in your stead. But a man who is alarmed, distressed, amazed, and conscious of his guilt, when he hears of this strange, this wondrous plan of not imputing unto us our trespasses, because God has laid all our iniquity upon Jesus, our surety and substitute, rejoices when he hears of it, and at once flies to it. When you feel the burden of your sin, and you see that city, you see Jesus Christ who paid the penalty for you, you're going to flee. You're going to run as fast as you can. And you're going to bow to him. Why? Because you're dead in your sins. You've murdered yourself. Each one of us have. You deserve death. You deserve separation from God for eternity. But Jesus Christ is a refuge, isn't he? John 3:16, for God so loved the world, that whosoever believeth on him shall not perish, but have everlasting life. John 3:18, and I don't want to misquote it, so I'm going to turn over there quickly. He that believeth on him is not condemned, but he that believeth not is condemned already, because he hath not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God. That's the difference. One has fled to the city of refuge. He's not condemned. Why? Because he believes on the name of the only begotten Son of God. On the other hand, are those that have not fled. They haven't believed, and they are condemned already. The penalty is just waiting to be put into place. And Jesus Christ, he is the city of refuge. He says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh to the Father but by me. You want to spend eternity with God in heaven? There's only one way to do it, and that's through Christ. That's that city of refuge. So what's your actions? Well, you have to flee. You have to repent. You trust Christ. Trust the words that the Father has said, that when you turn to Him, He'll forgive your sins. Trust that. Believe upon that. Run to Him. Don't wait. Don't let someone distract you. Don't let someone change the signs and point you in another direction. Flee to Christ. Flee to that city of refuge, just as if the blood avenger was hot on your heels. Because he may be. He may be there. So one last quote from Spurgeon on the source of that strong consolation. He says, see how the apostle dwells upon the promise and the oath as the two immutable things, and not upon temporal blessings. Outward providence is changed, but the oath never changes. Hold you on to that. Your comfort must not even depend upon sensible realizations of God's favor, nor on sweet communions and delights. No, but upon He has said it and He has sworn it. Those are the two strong pillars upon which your comfort must rest. That's what our faith is in. It's upon God's word. He said it. We don't trust our faith. We trust the one who has given us our faith. We trust the object of our faith. Why? Because God has said it. Not because there is some other way. Not because there was some emotion. When there are doubts, when there are storms that come, God is our refuge. But if he hasn't been your city of refuge yet, then you have no refuge. You have no place of safety. You have no place to go in those storms. Sin is bearing down upon you. Death is bearing down upon you. You have to flee to Christ. Turn away from yourself. You can't do it. And you flee to Christ. And for the Christian, hopefully this is an encouragement to you. Encouragement to you that you're in the city. You're there. That you're where comfort dwells. You have no fear from the blood avenger. Death can't touch you anymore. Why? Because you are in Christ. And you dwell in Him safely. What a blessing it is. We ask the musicians to come.